Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. These stories are numerous, and I'll get to them in a moment. But I want to give this show a title. The title is Tasting the Bitterness of Foreign Conquest for the First Time. Sounds a little esoteric. It sounds a little much like a history book. But I was reading about the primitive Aryans in Europe, who had lived there for thousands of years, going back to 2000 BC at least. Group of tribes, mainly of the fair and blue-eyed Nordic race, who occupied Europe at that time. They weren't numerous in numbers, and the Babylonians at the time didn't even know they existed. Egypt at that time was ancient and cultivated. And the fact of the matter is, many in those days were for the first time tasting the bitterness of foreign conquest. When I read that in this history book, I said, that sounds familiar to me. And I said, is America now tasting the bitterness of foreign conquest for the first time? And that's what today's show is going to be devoted to, because many of us fear that, in fact, we have been conquered and that Obama is a stooge for the foreign conquerors, whether they be the Chinese or the Saudis or other forces. We don't really know, but we don't sense that Obama is really the president of the United States of America. In a sense, the wisest of us, of the writers amongst us, understand that he really isn't the president of the American people. He is more like a European bureaucrat, a man who has no sense of the American exceptionalism, a man who takes no pride in America and its achievements, a man who almost has a disdain for everything America has stood for. In that sense, he seems to conquerors, albeit at a mild level right now. Of course, is about the only thing that stands between them nakedly showing their conquest of this country in the minds of people who I know and the minds of people who, believe me, you probably know. Many of us feel that Obama will soon move to take away our Second Amendment rights, and after which we will be another group of peons to be manipulated the way Castro manipulated the Cubans or Stalin manipulated the Russians or Hitler manipulated the Germans. That's a nightmare scenario. It may be a paranoid scenario, but it's a very real scenario under the auspices of Barack Obama and company. I looked at some of the news stories, and we learned that a panel that was put in place to find out what caused the financial meltdown concluded what I concluded in trickle-up poverty. I knew it all along. I proved it in my book. I was way ahead of the media on this. The panelists finally concluded that the meltdown of our banks was avoidable. And guess who's to blame? Everyone but them. In other words, it was orchestrated. The forces that manipulated our currency and stole your 401k, busted out pension funds, broke the housing bubble, are still doing it. None of them went to jail. And frankly, they're going to do it again, only we don't know what they're concocting right now at Davos. Now, here's another story, not directly related, but it's a very important relationship in its own way. Nancy Pelosi, according to Judicial Watch, they studied this. In the year 2010, just from January 1 through October 1, Nancy Pelosi, the most arrogant Speaker of the House in the history of this fair republic, flew 90,000 miles on Air Force planes. 90,000 miles on Air Force planes. And she used Air Force personnel as though they were just her own ushers and lackeys. Now, it's bad enough that Nancy Pelosi and her family and her friends abused the U.S. Air Force by using their planes and using our personnel. What's worse, though, is that I'd like to know where the investigation is. Should there be a House Ethics Committee investigating Nancy Pelosi immediately? And when they find that this is true, charge her with ethics violations and make Nancy Pelosi reimburse the taxpayers? it will never happen. There are many flights. It's all on michaelsavage.com, linked up from Judicial Watch. They have done their job. Is that related to my opening statement that are we tasting the bitterness of foreign conquest for the first time? Is that what we feel? And who was behind it? Yes, I would say there was a connection. Yes, I would say that the corruption in this country at the highest levels is what to me indicates most that we are no longer living in the United States of America. It's some other nation. Many of us sense it. We feel it. We don't know what's wrong. We don't understand it. We heard Pelosi and Obama touting green jobs. Most of us who work for a living know it's a bunch of crap. Most of us who work for a living and produce a product or a service or build a house or do something useful, in other words, knew that this green job nonsense was nothing but a scam put out by scam artists. Guess who was right? We cynics or you left-wing lunatics? A new study says that the UN's anti-poverty agency spent as much as $288,700 on each green job. Each green job cost almost $300,000. Do you understand that? Here's another story. Is it related to my theme that we're tasting the bitterness of foreign conquest for the first time? We have a Department of Homeland Security, allegedly. We know it's a bloated agency that doesn't protect us from the illegal aliens, from the contraband, from the drugs, from the gangs coming over the border. We know that the Department of Homeland Security seems to be against the people rather than for the people. We know they're abusing the people rather than protecting the people. A study just came out, a report, that a book, an Iranian book, celebrating suicide bombers, was found in the desert near Arizona's border with Mexico. That's right. An Iranian book celebrating suicide bombers was found in the desert near Arizona's border with Mexico. You say, well, big deal. So only one Iranian Al-Qaeda member snuck in. How many are in here? How many are in this country right now working amongst us, getting ready to set off a bomb somewhere? Would you know? Would I know? How would I know? That's the job of the FBI and the DHS. Instead, they arrested 78 old Italian guys for not making pizza properly. And incidentally, I want to go back to that big FBI bust last week when the dictator of China was here. Wouldn't you call that racial profiling, arresting all Italian Americans? The fact is, maybe they are criminals. Why was it all Italian Americans, all European Americans? There was not one other ethnic gang member arrested at that time. To me, it's ethnic profiling, and yet we've been told by the FBI that they can't engage in ethnic profiling. We've been begging the DHS to ethnically profile at airports so your grandmother doesn't have to have her skirts lifted. And the DHS says we will never racially profile. Well, I think that the FBI just did racially profile. How about you? A book celebrating suicide bombers found in the Arizona desert here in the United States. The book is entitled In Memory of Our Martyrs, spotted by a U.S. Border Patrol agent out of the Casa Grande substation who was patrolling a route known for smuggling illegal immigrants and drugs. Published in Iran, the book consists of short biographies of Islamic suicide bombers and other Islamic militants who died carrying out attacks. Doesn't that worry you? Where's the DHS? Where's U.S. Customs and Border Protection? Where are our so-called authorities? Here's the answer. A useless spokesmouth for the DHS said, at this time, DHS does not have any credible information on terrorist groups operating along the southwest border. The spokesmouth said, we work closely with our partners in the law enforcement and intelligence communities, and as a matter of due diligence and law enforcement best practice, blah, 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 blah. Well, there it is. You feel protected under this administration? Authorities would not release a picture of the book to Fox News or reveal how long they believe it was lying in the desert. But by the way, this was not the first time. Immigration officials have previously discovered items along the U.S.-Mexico border from Middle Eastern origin, including Iranian currency in Zapata, Texas, and a jacket found in Jim Hogg County, Texas, that was covered in patches, including an Arabic military badge that illustrates an airplane flying into a tower. Instead, they're frisking you at airports. Instead, they're not putting the military on the border with Mexico. And that's why I say to you, is America now tasting the bitterness of foreign conquest for the first time? I'm not asking you to call about any of this. I'm just here to report on what I see going on in this country. Now, before I take my first break, I have many, many other things to talk about. I can't do it all in the first 15 minutes. I direct you to my website to take a look at some of these stories and others. I'm also going to focus in this show today on a furtherance of my postulate that we are, in fact, tasting the bitterness of foreign conquest in this country for the first time. And I'm going to refer you to the foreign free trade zones in this country and what they are. Many of you don't even know they exist. But we have several hundred foreign trade zones in this country that are occupied by Chinese workers that are not subject to U.S. laws. Do you think they're really here because they want to avoid tariffs and provide you with sneakers at a lower price? That's a lie because there are no tariffs. So why are several hundred foreign trade zones filled with foreign nationals operating here in this country? Are they really a stealth army in this country? Who let them in? Why are they here? I'll be right back.
Savage.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about, it's an esoteric topic. It's a big snowstorm in the East. Maybe you're not interested in it, Currier and Ives, you're cozy in your house, and you think that maybe this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And I'm saying, am I tasting the bitterness of foreign conquest for the first time because it's real or because I'm a paranoid, delusional individual and it's not true? In other words, Obama's a real patriot. The president of China really loves us. The Iranians mean us no harm, and so forth and so on. Nancy Pelosi is an honest, honorable woman. There is no terror on the border. All the Mexicans come here to work hard, etc. Or is there some reality or great reality to what I'm saying? You know where I come from. I wouldn't have brought it up if I thought it was absurd. And then you look at the president and the so-called first lady themselves, and you ask yourself, are you kidding me? You've got a media that is so sycophantic and so owned by the government that they say things about this couple that is so disconnected from reality that it's not worth mentioning, okay? And I don't have to get bitter or guttural to tell you what I actually think of Obama. I believe he's a fraud. I believe he's an imposter. I believe he was put in power by the people who manipulated the currency to scare us into electing an unknown man in order to save us. And I believe that the report that just came out confirms everything I just said. Now, approximately 200,000 of you have bought my book, Trickle Up Poverty, in hardcover, which means that at least 400,000 people have read the book. Since I have allegedly 8 to 10 million listeners a week on the Savage Nation, that means average what? 2 million a day. 2 million a day is a big number. So several million a day, a million a day, whatever the number is, it's a lot of people listen to the Savage Nation in and out over a three-hour period. So not all of you are crazy. Some of you agree with me that Obama doesn't look like the president in the way he behaves, not because of his skin color. Let's clear the air already and stop with the big threat behind it all. You're not allowed to criticize him because he's a black man. I'm sick of this garbage. I would have taken a black man who was a patriot, but I don't want an unknown con man in the White House. So let's stop already with the talk about the black man. That's how he got elected, because of your white idiot guilt, you guilt-ridden lunatics. That's why he's the president, because you were brainwashed for 30 years. So I want to go back to what I'm talking about. We're not the first people on earth who have tasted the bitterness of foreign conquest, but this is only the beginning. This is not the end. This is not how it ends when you have a foreign conquest. This is how it begins. In the ancient days, it would have been by warfare. In the modern days, it's not by warfare. We're too powerful militarily, and too many of us own guns for them to have come in and march around with the Red Star and start telling you how to run your life and to put your daughters in the sand pile up to their eyes because they only want young men. That's not how it begins. That's how it ends. No, my friends, that's how it ends. But it ended that way for the primitive Aryans a long time ago when they first tasted the bitterness of foreign conquest, as it ended that way for the Egyptians, by the way, who had at that time, and I'm saying thousands of years ago, tasted the bitterness of foreign conquest. It's how it ends for all civilizations. If you look at the proud Sicilian people, you see Sicilians in America, very successful, very proud, and you say, well, there are people who have never been conquered. That means you don't know a thing about Sicilian history. The people of Sicily were conquered, as I remember, approximately 8 or 9 times. One wave after another conquered that beautiful island, subjugated the people, and turned the island to their ways. We have never been conquered, comma, yet, period. But we see it happening, we smell it happening, We know what's happened of the issue. There wouldn't be such rancor in this country if he was merely a liberal Democrat who was out to help the poor. We know it's much worse than that. I have spelled out in immense detail for the world to read my proof that he is a revolutionary Marxist. Now, by now, you've heard it so many times that you're immune to it. And, of course, John McCain, who was a shill for the power structure that gave us this problem, goes around to this day, again shaming himself, again showing us the shame of the establishment Republican Party, covering for Barack Hussein Obama. Every time this man gets into a corner, there's John McShane popping out of the woodwork to cover for Obama. He did it during the election to make sure he became the president, and he did it just last week once again. I hardly disagree with old McShane. And I want to tell you something else. You better get ready for another 4 years of Obama after the next 2 years of this regime. Because as far as I can tell, they're going to do it to us again. I told you how the game is played by the people behind the throne. Told it to you before. It's 8 years Dems, Clinton. 8 years Repubs, Bush. You think they're going to let the Democrat Party walk away after only 4 years because they're exciting you to think that Sarah Palin or Romney is going to win? Are you kidding me? Romney is being set up as a fall guy again, the way he was to let McCain win. And if Romney is the selected one for the Republican Party, you're going to have Obama for another 4 years. That's why I told you. I've had Donald Trump on the show. I don't know whether he's going to run or really wants to run. I hope he does. I think only a businessman who's patriotic and gung-ho military like Donald Trump can save the country. That's what I personally believe. Whether he's going to run or not, I don't know. Is he a personal friend of mine? No. I met him two or three times at Mar-a-Lago. I like his politics. And I like his lettuce. That's all I know about Donald Trump. He also has great taste in architecture, and he has immense energy, and a fundamental structure of detail that I've never seen in any other businessman. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I believe in the original intent of the Constitution, which means that the federal government should just be doing basically the 18 things in Article 1, Section 8, very little else. Mr. Obama believes in a big central government where the federal government controls everything in our lives. That's socialism, and so I stick by that tweet.
Good for you. That's Paul Brown, Republican of Georgia, stands by his comments made during the State of the Union of Obama being a socialist. Thank God we have at least one congressman willing to stand up to this a revolutionary dictator that's emerging in our country. Now, I want to go back for a moment to history, and then I'm going to go back to the doghouse. Sorry to be so blunt, but I need to get your attention. So I think I'll get your attention any way I can. And I want to go back because I was reading a little history, a little sketch of history of the ancient Aryan peoples, and you know who they are, of course. They are the fair and blue-eyed race, the fair and blue-eyed Nordic race that, in essence, peopled Europe after the so-called predecessors, after the predecessors, the so-called other peoples. And they were farmers, and they were spreading out over the range of the European area. And at the other extremity of the Aryan people, or the other side of the Aryan range, there was a similar progress being made these thousands of years ago, southward of similar tribes. And who were they? They were Aryan peoples who spoke Sanskrit, who had come down through the western passes into North India long before 1000 BC. Many of you don't know that the people of India are descended from the Aryan people. And the Indians who came down at that time, although they were of Aryan descent, they came in contact with a primordial brunette civilization, the Dravidian civilization, and they intermingled and learned much from each other. And then the Aryan tribes spread over the mountain masses of Central Asia, far to the east of the present range, and in eastern Turkestan. There still are fair blue-eyed Nordic tribes, but now they speak Mongolian tongues. And that explains, by the way, how you sometimes see fair blue-eyed people of Nordic looks speaking Mongolian tongues or other tongues that don't seem to match their looks. It shows the beauty of human evolution and population movements. And so I'm now going to move the history forward a little bit in this thumbnail sketch. I know it's really not normal for talk radio to do this, but it's something I used to do an awful lot of years ago, and I'm going to do more of it as time goes on, because the only way to understand Obama and the discord he is sowing in this country is to put this man in context. So here we go again, right? So over history, they're spreading out the ancient Aryans, and from the 9th century before Christ, 9th century B.C., onward for 600 years, is basically a story of how these Aryan peoples grew to power, and through enterprise and conquest, they subjugated the entire ancient world, Semitic, Aegean, and Egyptian alike. And they were victorious. But although the Aryans were victorious over the Semitic, Aegean, and Egyptian people, the struggle of the Aryan, Semitic, and Egyptian ideas and methods continued long after the Aryans ruled. And yet this struggle now goes on and has gone on throughout the rest of history. It's been a constant struggle between Aryan, Semitic, Egyptian, and shall I say, other Asiatic peoples. It never ended. It never will end. And if you think that the day will come that all peoples will hold hands in the United Nations and get along together, I'd like to know what you've been smoking. So now let's go to the doorman. Well, let's start with the State of the Union address. Let us see how he spoke about the country that his wife found to be exceptional only when they became the first couple. Okay? We have 100,000 troops on the ground fighting the throwback Taliban in defense of the United States and the free world. 100,000 men in Afghanistan fighting medieval throwbacks defending the United States and the free world. How many words did Obama devote to this battle? 132 words to the war effort and what's involved. He did not talk about a plan for victory in Afghanistan. He did not talk about what the importance of the conflict was. He didn't talk about the war against Islamic extremism, which he won't even identify. And what about the single biggest crisis facing Obama today outside of the financial crisis, the Iranian nuclear crisis, the biggest foreign policy disaster, both for Bush and now for Obama? Did he mention it? He didn't mention it. He hardly said a word about it. He put out one line in his speech, one line about the Iranian nuclear crisis, one line. Did he mention any support for dissidents in Iran who are fighting for their survival and for democracy in Iran? Not one word. Did Obama, like Reagan would have, put out a clear signal that the U.S. stands with those dissidents who are being brutally beaten to death, raped, and killed by the brutal throwback Islamist dictatorship? Not one word. Did Obama speak about human rights the way Ronald Reagan did or the way George W. Bush did? Not once. Did he say one word about human rights abuses in China? Not one word. Did he say one word about the hundreds of millions living under tyrants in North Korea, Zimbabwe, Burma, or the other nations? Not one word. Not one U.S. administration in the history of this country has paid less attention to the spread of tyranny along the around the earth than Obama. Not one liberal said one word about human rights and human rights abuses and the lack of any interest by Obama in human rights. How about America as a great, unique superpower and the huge sacrifices that we've made defending liberty across the world from Normandy to Afghanistan? Did Obama mention anything about American exceptionalism? No, he didn't say one word about it. And so, therefore, Obama has no fundamental belief in American greatness on the world stage. He has no vision of us as a superpower standing up to tyrants around the world. He has no vision of us standing up to the threats to U.S. security. And instead of projecting U.S. power and U.S. values, Obama is out to engage and appease our enemies. There's much more that I could say, but he is not a president in the sense that we know a president to be. And so that's why many of us feel, shall I say, nervous. Many of us feel other things than nervous about Obama and his lack of leadership or his shenanigans, if you want to put it in a common parlance. I have other feelings about the man. Some days I wake up and I can't do this radio show, and I've never felt that. I wake up and I can't do it because I feel like an oncologist who's just gotten the lab reports, and I don't know whether to tell the patient that it's terminal. And I don't know whether it would be a blessing to tell the patient that we closed up the surgical cut and that he's going to live when I know he's going to die. Some days I don't know whether I can go on the air. Today I knew I could go on the air. Today I felt very good. I felt healed and I felt strong. And today I don't feel quite as pessimistic as I did yesterday. Perhaps it was the poisonous Chinese food that I ate the day before. Remember I was on the air Tuesday? And I said to you, I have indigestion from a Chinese meal I just had. Now, I've eaten Chinese food all my life. There's one little restaurant. He sold me what he calls scallops. And I've asked him 100 times, where are the scallops from? He tells me Boston. A friend of mine told me a lot of the scallops out there are fake. They're not even scallops. They're cut out of skate wings with a round potato cutter. So maybe the skate was poisonous. I got very sick. My hands, I got to tell you exactly the symptoms for those of you who are interested. That night after the show, I ran a high fever, my face turned red, and my hands lost all circulation. I had to wear gloves in bed all night. What's that a symptom of? An allergic reaction? Is it a symptom of a 24-hour virus? I don't know what it was, but I had it. That's why I wasn't on the air yesterday. But I spent the whole day in bed, and I did a lot of reading and digging and looking and thinking. I read a lot of history, read a lot about the history of America, reread the history of the Aryan peoples, and I reread the history of the conflict between the various peoples of the earth. And I said to myself, well, all right, what do? I'm the oncologist. I'm going to come back and tell the patient what, everything is fine? Or shall I say, I think we're tasting the bitterness of foreign conquest for the first time. Okay, so there it is. That's the nature of the show. It's taken me about 45 minutes to lay the foundation. If you have any comments to make on anything I have said or anything you think that you'd like to say, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the first caller out of Maine. Mary, go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, as soon as I heard you say that phrase, are we experiencing the bitterness of foreign conquest, I thought, oh my gosh, you're so right. And I consider it, another way to say it, is a spiritual conquest, because America stands for something good. It always has. We're a good people. We want what's good.
Well, but then you're going to get the left wing right away bringing up slavery. That's all they know. They go right to the slavery issue as though everyone in America kept a slave and everyone living in America today was a slaveholder. That's the canard of the left. That's the big lie of the left. Okay, this is the best nation on earth, has done more good for more people on earth than any other nation in the history of the world. And I am sick of listening to people who run my country down. I'm sick of it. And I don't want to hear it anymore. I don't want this. I don't want to listen to these communist liars try to make me ashamed of this great nation. And I'd like to compare the record of this nation with that of Saudi Arabia or of Russia or of China in human rights. And I'd like to see all these leftists stand up and tell me that Saudi Arabia or Russia or China has done more good for more people than America has. There's not a nation on earth that has done more good for more people than this nation has. And I am sick and tired of listening to the left-wing communists who always go back to the same arguments. Jim Crow, slavery, the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, and communism. I'm sick of it. So there, I got it off my chest. Maybe I'm getting rid of the food poisoning through my brain. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Chicago, Anthony, fire away, you're on the show.
Mike, I love it when you get fired up like that. Now I know why everyone listens to you. Listen, my main topic is Mitt Romney. Now, I know that you've had a sit-down with the guy before, and I'm just wondering, why not Mitt Romney? When I saw him speak the other day, after seeing Obama, who, by the way, looked very sick and weak during his speech, Mitt Romney seemed like a fresh face.
Well, let's put it this way. I like Mitt Romney when I met him. I think he has a wonderful family, the 5 sons. His story is fabulous. He has a business background. He looks good. He speaks good. There are some structural problems that I think will plague him. Number one is RomneyCare in Massachusetts, which is Obamacare Jr. In fact, Obamacare was modeled on RomneyCare. I don't know if you know that. And I believe it's going to come to haunt him. I think that's a big deficit. I believe also that Mitt Romney is a mainstream check-pants Republican along the lines of Rockefeller, and I believe as such, he's not going to give us the structural change that we need in this country to save us from this descent into socialism. I believe that only a man who's a true capitalist, who has taken on some evil forces on this earth, can save us. And I don't know that Romney has the guts for the job, frankly.
Yeah, I agree with you to some extent with that, but just visually looking at the guy, if I can just add about...
Oh, fine. I mean, you want visual. That's another story. He'd be a great visual leader. His wife and he and his children, a wonderful image for America. I agree. But, I mean, do we want style or substance?
Well, anything other than Obama and his administration. When I saw him in his speech, did you notice how he kept using the term "our people"? All the time he kept saying "our people." And then all you really got out of all his speech was that he's going to help the teachers union, he's going to help the EMA, he's going to help...
No, there was nothing there. The man is nothing but a shill for the people who put him in office, but there's nothing new about that. You know what I'm saying? Okay, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's take a quick shot at another caller. Let's go to Florida. Matt, go ahead. Please, you're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Doctor. I wanted to help illustrate how Obama's, your remarks about Obama having no sense of American exceptionalism came to light for me. At the very end of his speech, in addition to all the smoke and mirrors that he espoused, he made the remark that our founders were ordinary people. I take tremendous exception to that. Thomas Jefferson was an ordinary person. Benjamin Franklin was an ordinary person. George Washington was an ordinary person. I don't think so. I think Obama...
Well, hold on 1 minute, because this is a tangential statement. George Washington was a very brilliant man and very exceptional, as you're alluding to. But do you know one of the first acts that Washington engaged in when this nation was in its infancy? Was he imposed tariffs on foreign manufactured goods in order to permit American industries to thrive. The industries were just getting off the ground. They had trouble competing with foreign goods coming in from England and France and Germany. And the foreign powers were trying to crush the native industries. Washington wisely put in tariffs to let native industries grow. That is why I've called for 20% tariffs on Chinese goods, as does Donald Trump. I'd like to see one other politician sitting in office say it, and the reason you're not going to hear it is because they're all bought and sold by Beijing. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I think that the American people expect and deserve people to come to Washington to work together for them. There are different views that we have here, and that's what I thought was wonderful about the president's speech. That's what a democracy is all about.
And that's why she used U.S. Air Force aircraft and personnel for a total of 43 trips covering 90,000 miles just from January through October 2010. And there should be, in my opinion, a House Ethics Committee investigation of Nancy Pelosi's use and abuse of the U.S. Air Force planes. I have never seen anything like the arrogance and the imperiousness of this woman. You know, it's one thing to have power. It's another thing to use that power in such an abusive manner. We all expect governmental officials to enjoy their office and to enjoy the perks of their office, but we have never seen an administration so filled with abusers as we do now. Never. It's never been like this. Now, speaking of threats to the Republic, we've touched on some of the threats from within, and that's obvious. Here's a story out of Afghanistan, and we'll start with Muslims in England. As you know, Michael Savage, I am the only member of the American media banned from entering the United Kingdom, right? Okay. Muslims launch fatwa against British Home Secretary. Scotland Yard is investigating posters that appeared at the same time as the Home Secretary announced controversial reforms on handling terrorism suspects. Now, I want you to understand the irony of this story. Here I am, Michael Savage, an American broadcaster who has never threatened anyone, who is not allowed to enter the United Kingdom, which is rife with Muslim fanatics who are threatening the Home Secretary herself, and that country has so lost its you-know-what that they don't round them up and throw them out of the country. Now, let's tie it to the next story. Afghan infants fed pure opium. Take a look at the picture I found of this story. Afghan infants fed pure opium. In a far-flung corner of northern Afghanistan, Aziza reaches into the dark wooden cupboard, rummages around, and pulls out a small lump of something wrapped in plastic. And it shows her feeding her poor little baby opium, like a little chocolate every day, because the baby is starving and they're very poor, and they've used opium for centuries to alleviate their hunger pangs and to permit them to continue working on the carpets that they happen to be weaving. It's a very sad and touching story. And I ask myself, how can a world go on where we have such plenty in so many corners of the world, while in Afghanistan you have children who are being fed opium because they're starving to death? The whole thing is wrong. Nothing makes sense to me anymore. And so you can see these stories about the Muslims launching a fatwa against the British Home Secretary, or the little redheaded boy being fed pure opium. And that's an interesting story unto itself. Why is the little boy red-haired in Afghanistan? It goes back to what I told you earlier. You don't understand that many of the peoples of the Near and Far East are descendants of the Aryan race that descended on that area millennia ago, okay? Let us say thousands of years ago, if you want to put it that way. 1-800-449-8255. I'm almost out of time in this. I don't know where the time went. I told you I'm all charged up. Incidentally, I revamped the website and put stories in a new way on the site. The lead one is from CNN, who did a much better job than Fox News. I've never seen anything quite as well done. FBI misconduct reveals sex lies and videotape. You're not going to believe this story when I get back, right from CNN, on the type of individuals the FBI has hired under Obama, the kind of crimes they have been found committing, and the lack of punishment for these individuals. I'll take gay Edgar Hoover any day.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. And we are talking about the horrible State of the Union with the Presidente. And I said in the last hour that it seems to me we're tasting the bitterness of foreign conquest for the first time, albeit in a different manner than it would have been in ancient times, where foreign powers invaded, conquered, raped the women and killed the men or enslaved them. Today it's done in a much different way. It's done economically first, and before you know it, they don't have to fire a shot. Of course, if you look at the writings of Sun Tzu, that's how it was done, even in ancient times, by the very wise. The mark of the best swordsman is he who does not need to even pull the sword from the hilt, and so on. And so therefore, many of us who are strategically inclined and who have studied strategy and studied the fate of nations, who go way beyond the newspapers, who have a little bit of history, a little bit of education, but mostly a sense of survival, can understand that something is amiss in the land. And there's no better example of it than the president himself, in the sense that he continues to disrespect America's exceptionalism and virtually pay no attention to human rights abuses around the globe, which is very worrisome, because most of us feel that the human rights abuses will only begin here unless we fight them over there. And I don't want to review the entire subject matter of the last hour. I'd like to invite you to call if you've been listening, 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website, which has many of the stories I have touched upon. I think the safest course of action right now is to play Baby, It's Cold Outside. Al Gore turns out to be not only a liar, but a thief, in my opinion. There's clearly no global warming. It's global cooling. Either he's a lunatic or a liar. In either case, he should be arrested. Talk about a congressional investigation. Yeah, right. And investigate Al Gore. That's like investigating the bankers who stole the trillions of dollars and then claimed the crisis was caused by a systemic collapse. They caused the collapse. To give us the WOR New York, welcome to the show. Go ahead, Sue.
Hello, Michael. I've spoken to you once before. I just want to let you know I'm a military vet that's retired after 25 years, critical care nurse almost 30 years. I'm fighting cancer right now full-time and so far successfully so. And I want to let you know that you have been sounding a little despondent tonight. I fear for your health. And I just wanted to know that you're...
Wait, are you a psychiatric nurse? Then I'll take you seriously.
No.
See, at least you got a sense of humor.
Yeah, it's pretty close. I think they're about the same. But ER nurses, you're plenty of psych.
Don't worry about my health. I mean, you know, it is what it is. I'm in good shape. I had a day off because I got a little food poisoning from a little local Chinese guy who I know 20 years, smiles at me and gives me some contaminated seafood every once in a while. That's all. You know, he figures, why not? Why not? The moron will keep buying. He'll keep giving me the sewer shrimp. You know what I mean? If I'm stupid enough to buy from him, why not give it to me again?
I don't know. You're talking about being laid up with numb extremities, so it sounded a little...
Yeah, no, that was odd, though. It was within 6 hours, my extremities were ice cold. I had to wear gloves, and my face turned red, and it was hot, and I ran a fever. That's classically food allergy, isn't it?
I wouldn't say that's classic, no.
what is it then? I'm not Al Capone. It can't be syphilis.
No, it's not syphilis. It sounds menopausal to me, but no.
Oh, a hot flash. Thank you. That was really a nice setup. Just kick me right in the face next time, darling.
You got to realize I'm a little crude and rude. It's just part of the profession. But
I don't mind. I can handle it. So, I mean, what are those symptoms? In your mind, if you're a trauma nurse and I come in and I said I ate Chinese food, went on the air that day, took an Alka-Seltzer during the show, complaining of indigestion, and that night I had to run home with ice-cold hands, had a fever, my face was red, and stayed in bed for a day. What is that?
Yeah, maybe it's the MSG and some vasodilation thing going on with your face, but then you got the shunting from the extremities. So, as long as you're okay today, we're all right.
No, I came back pretty good. I mean, for a guy, you know, who's been around for almost 7 decades, I'm in, I don't want to, you know, knock wood, but I mean, so far, so good. Most guys 50 are on 7 medications, you know what I mean? And I'm not boasting. I know tomorrow it could be another story. I could have the transfusion tree and the walker. I know how that works.
Exactly.
You gotta laugh mortality in the eye. You gotta laugh fate in the eye, but most importantly you gotta laugh the government in the eye. Because when you have a government like this that's so corrupt and inept at the same time, it's very, very dangerous. But the minute you get frightened of it, it's going to get worse. I'm telling you, that's how I see it. You cannot let these people frighten us. That's the most important message I take from it all.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And you want to hear something interesting? They all sat together, which was really a disaster as far as I'm concerned, to see the pink shirts of the Republicans sitting next to the red shirts, the Democrats, really sickened me. Because we used to have a phrase, the other side of the aisle. There was a reason that they were divided. There was a reason that the brilliant ancient white guys created a divided house. There was a reason we had a separation of the two parties. There was a good reason for it. And the day they're all sitting together and loving each other is a day that they've merged into one, and that scares the heck out of me. I got to tell you that.
Yeah, no one's allowed to argue anymore. It's just not the...
They're supposed to argue with each other. That's what they're paid for. They're not supposed to get along and screw us behind the scenes. You know what I'm saying? So don't worry so much about my health, okay? Thank you for thinking about me. I appreciate it. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. There's some other unpleasantness out there, by the way, which I can point out or not point out. It's snowing in the east, 3 feet of snow, and Al Gore, of course, is nowhere to be seen whenever it snows. He's hide somewhere. No doubt he's at the World Economic Forum figuring out how to screw the people of the earth with more fear-mongering, more yellow journalism and more fraudulent science. And there seems to be no one out there in the government to stop him that I can think of, other than a few brave people who stood up to him. But I want to read something to you that you're not going to believe. We have a mean-spirited, psychotic representative named Jim Moran. He is a very, very mean-spirited man. Very, very mean-spirited man from New York named Jim Moran. He's anti-Semitic. He always has something hateful to say about Israel. And somehow he managed to con the people of Alexandria, Virginia, into becoming their congressman. He hates conservatives, perhaps more than he hates America. And the other night, after Obama's State of the Union, Moran was interviewed by his friends on an Arab network. And I'm going to read you his words. Here's what he said. If the Republican successes in the 2010 elections happened for the same reason the Civil War happened in the United States, it happened because the southern states, the slaveholding states, didn't want to see a president who was opposed to slavery. And he went on, Jim Moran, and he said, in this case, I believe a lot of people in the United States don't want to be governed by an African American, particularly one who is liberal, who wants to spend money and who wants to reach out to include everyone in our society. That was a congressman of the United States of America. It's on an Arabic network. This is a man who is a Democrat. This is a man whose hands are deeply inside the Islamist pocketbook. This is a man who has nothing good to say about Jews or Israel. This is a man who claims to be a liberal Democrat. This is a man who has nothing evil to say about Sharia law, where a woman will be killed if she sleeps with anyone who is not a Muslim. This is a man who has nothing negative to say about a country that chops off a hand of someone who robs a loaf of pita bread. This is a man who says, I believe a lot of people in the United States don't want to be governed by an African-American. All over again, still bringing up the same hateful, lying rhetoric that he is famous for. And he is not a Republican. I am Michael Savage, and I am an independent. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm willing to look at other ideas to bring down costs, including one that Republicans suggested last year, medical malpractice reform to rein in frivolous lawsuits.
Congressman Dennis Kucinich is suing a U.S. House of Representatives cafeteria for selling him a sandwich wrap that contained an olive pig. Congressman Kucinich says it caused him permanent dental and oral injuries when he bit into that pit. He's asking for $150,000 in damages.
Okay, so there's a liberal Democrat for you suing over an olive pit, suing the congressional cafeteria because the vegetarian sandwich he ate had an olive pit in it, and he says he broke a tooth. There's your classic liberalism at work. And, of course, there's nothing more that can be said. Dennis Kucinich suing the House of Representatives cafeteria for selling him a sandwich wrap containing an olive pit. While Obama says he wants to follow the Republicans and rein in medical malpractice through stopping frivolous lawsuits. Is there a disconnect? No, there's no disconnect. Florida Tom, speaking of doctors, you're on the air. What's on your mind, Tom?
Yeah, hi. I'm a physician here in St. Pete, Clearwater, but I think I know what's wrong with you, what kind of poisoning you had.
No, I'm serious. Give me a diagnosis on the air.
Okay. Now, did the seafood, did it have any fish in it?
Oh, yeah, it was allegedly scallops.
Okay. Well, now, what happens is if you get old fish that has been allowed to defrost and then heat back up, certain fishes have an extra amount of histamine in it. And when you eat it, the histamine's released and you get the flushing, you know, the red face, the tingly fingers. And
yes.
A lot of times people get nausea, abdominal cramping, diarrhea.
Yeah. Yes, 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 yes.
Classical scromboid, scromboid, lasts about 24 hours, and it's just
exactly the symptomology. And you know what kills me about it is I've eaten in this guy, smiles to my face, and I ask him over and over again, where are the scallops from? He says, oh, they're from Boston. Another friend of mine says many scallops are not scallops. They're pressed out of the skate wings, number one. But in either case, it could be contaminated seafood in plain English. And I recognize that. Most seafood today, I'm afraid of it.
Yeah, you got to be careful, and sometimes it'll have a metallic taste. So if
it didn't have it this time. He disguised it very well with his sauce.
Yeah, you see, that's the thing, you can't really tell, but look that up. That's classical scromboid. I think that's
unbelievable. You know, I'm so angry. It's not the first time. I've had trouble with him before with fish, but I stopped eating fish. I like the guy. So I said, where's your fish from? He says, from Vietnam. I said, I'll never eat it. Don't sell me fish from Vietnam. I won't eat it. You know, there's a local fish market I go to. I buy my fish fresh the way my aunt did, where I look at it and smell it. I'm not ashamed to smell it. That's how I know if it's fresh. I look at it and I smell it. You don't know what you're getting in restaurants. You know, when I was young, you know, at seafood restaurants, the waiter would come out with the fish you picked and they'd let you look at it and smell it, because everybody knew that most restaurants sold garbage unless you inspected it. People were smarter then. They demanded more out of a restaurant than they do today. Doctor?
Yeah, but the only thing, the other one it could be is Ciguatera, C-I-Q-U-I-T-E-R-A, but that would have lasted a little longer, and that's a neurotoxin, only from eating, like, reef fish. But you probably didn't have that because you're recovering.
No, I lived in Fiji for years, and I would recognize that one, but I'll tell you, the red face and the fever, and what worried me the most was the loss of circulation in my fingers. I had to wear gloves in bed, would you believe it?
That's pretty classical scromboid, if I'm saying.
I did nothing for it, truthfully, other than not eat and lay in bed.
That's all you can do. Just keep hydrated, and it'll go away.
Yeah, I'm so well, and I'm going to have a bottle of red wine tonight.
Yeah, you're perfectly back to normal now.
Oh, absolutely. I'm ready to go for the Italian red, the Super Tuscan with a little... I tell you right now, it's no more shellfish. The kosher food laws are starting to look better to me.
Well, that, you probably wouldn't get it from the shellfish, but you don't know what he had in there. If he had old fish, that's where you get it from.
God, don't get me started. You know, can I send you a present for the diagnosis? Can I send you a copy of Trickle Up Poverty? Would you accept it?
I'll take it. I already have two copies, though, but I'll take another one.
Oh, that's very kind of you. You know, as a physician, you've worked so hard to become a doctor, and the years of internship and then of residency, and then putting up with the patients. And now you wake up one day and the government wants to treat you like a waiter in the government cafeteria of medicine. It's a disgrace.
I don't want to get started on that. I have my standard lecture for my patients when they ask me.
To my doctor friends. I see guys who are at the head of their field in cardiology who are terrified as to what this Obamacare is going to do to their ability to deliver care in this country.
Well, I call it commie care.
Well, you and I would have a lot to talk about. It's very sad. You think of a country where the doctor was once held up as a role model for young men and young women to follow, and today you don't see it anymore. You don't have the best and the brightest going to medical school anymore, Tom. You really don't.
It costs them at least $200,000 in tuition to go to school.
Right. And what do they earn when they come out? What does a young physician make today?
Probably $100,500, $180,000.
Yeah, but that's not going to that's not going to last too much longer, is it?
Well, you don't know. Now, that's a physician who comes out and works and works and works. But, you know, that's $150,000, pretty good. But if you owe $200,000,
$150,000 before taxes is $75,000 after taxes to start with. Then you got student loans, and then you got the pay. So, how many years are they behind the hole? 5, 10 years?
At least, you know, because you're looking at, you know, if you owe $200,000, $250,000, I have to take care of medical students. They owe $250,000, and that's a 10-year debt. That's at $3,000-$4,000 a month right off the bat.
Unbelievable. Yeah, but it's the quality of care. It's the type of person going into medicine today that's a little different than when I. But, you know, you only have to look at the popular culture. When I was a kid, a popular show was Ben Casey, M.D. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
You know what we have now? Now it's Nurse Jackie, a junkie nurse who screws behind her husband's back. That's the role model from the psychotics in Hollywood. In my day, they held up a role model like Ben Casey, so people wanted to be a noble doctor. Now they show a junkie nurse who's also a whore. That's the country we live in today, and they wonder why the children are all wrecked. You don't have to look any further than the movies and the television. You don't have to look at talk radio, okay? Ban the movies before you ban talk radio. You'll have a better country.
Shrimp boats is a common, their sails are inside. Shrimp boats is a common, there's dancing tonight. Why don't you hurry, hurry, hurry home? Why don't you hurry, hurry, hurry home?
Look here, the shellfish now. Now we got the shellfish problem. But the scromboid diagnosis was good. It's a good benefit of the show. It's a perk of the show. I have the smartest people in America listen to the program. I was told even when I was a kid in graduate school that the smartest people were not going into government. I was told even then, well, you think it's any different now? You think that the bureaucrats you contact in whatever profession or business you're in are the smartest people on earth. The reason they take a government job is for the pension and to boss you around. Okay, that's what a bureaucracy is. I can finish the paragraph with more, but I won't. So what do you want to talk about? Scrumbroid or seafood? Oh, let's see other news. I have some other news. I've done now. The hard news you weren't interested in. You weren't interested in the Pelosi flying 90,000 miles on Air Force jets. You weren't interested in a suicide bombing book from Iran being found across the border. You weren't interested in the decline of the FBI and how I said that a man was a patriot and he knew when he cracked down on crime. If you see that report on CNN, you will not believe it. I put it up on my website, Michael Savage. It's frightening. It's terrifying to see the kinds of crimes that they caught FBI agents engaging in. Letting exotic dancers into FBI offices that they were having sex with and slapping them on the wrist. This is public. This is a public agency. But worse than that. Oh, it's worse than that. I'm shocked, by the way, that CNN did it. Fox News should have done a report like that. But no, they're too busy doing what they do, I guess. Look, the leg twitchers have their niche and CNN has their niche and the others have their own niche. And we in talk radio have our own niche. So how far can you go in talk radio without endangering yourself is the only question every day that you ask yourself. How far can you go? And the only question today is how far can you go in talk radio without endangering yourself further? Because every time you open your mouth in public, you're endangering yourself, especially as we see after Arizona, but long before Arizona. Long before Arizona, we saw this was a tough business to be in. The opinion business is not what it once was. We don't live in a free country. We live in a free but dangerous country. Let's be clear about it. And you could say, well, why are you still in it? I ask myself that every day, the way it is. You know, I was going to do a live event March 31st to be on. You want to hear what happened after Arizona? I've had many stations request that I come and do live events in Chicago. Listen carefully, please. Listen carefully. I was going to do a live event March 31st for my birthday. I probably have 2,000 people clamoring to come. I was going to do a public event. And you say, all right, you're cowarding, whatever. I don't care what you say. Talk radio is enough of a problem for me with the kind of threats I put up with for 16 years, the way I live with my head on a rotation, and the kind of world I've had to live in. I'm not complaining about it. I continue to do it because I think it's important. It's a game changer what happened. That's the absolute reality. He was not political, Loeffner, which is even worse. It's always the crazy person you have to worry about. Now I have to worry about scallops from my local Chinese restaurant on top of it all. Well, there's nothing new about that either. Nothing really is new. I told you when I was young, if you went to a seafood restaurant of any class, I remember to this day, the waiter would bring the seafood out, the fish with the dead eye, looked like the Sopranos with the eye, right to the table. And people smelled it. Now, I would wager a bet that most people would be too polite and too embarrassed to even smell a fish. They would say, oh, no, I'm too classy to smell a fish. That's if you could even get the waiter to carry it out to you. In San Francisco, I go to a couple of places where the seafood's very good. I don't have to smell it because I know they would only give me the best. You know what I'm saying? But you travel, you do. Like my aunt would say, you take your life in your hands even then. You have to be very careful. You have to smell like a... What do you think, a dog is dumb? Have you noticed that your dog will smell everything you give it? So maybe I should... No, someone will steal a title, but I'm not going to give it. All I can say is copy your dog. That's not the title. A dog knows what it's doing. It smells everything it eats. I do it in restaurants. They think I'm crazy. When my teeth were good, before I copied the Kucinich Act, I would normally crack a bone in a restaurant. I would gnaw on a bone. I don't do it anymore because the bones gnawed down the teeth in certain areas over the years. I used to enjoy an osso buco and then sucking the marrow out of the bone. Who does that anymore? They think you're crazy. If you eat anything that makes you look like a human being, you're considered impolite. There's something wrong with you. It has to be tricked up and with fake things and drizzled with something, and everything should have raspberry juice put on top of it. You could puke from the food that they make because most of them go to inferior cooking schools. They don't know what food is. They take every piece of garbage and mix it up with raspberries and drizzled olive oil that's supposed to make into a dish. So you see, I'd rather, in a way, talk about food than talk about Dennis Kucinich or tasting the bitterness of foreign conquest for the first time, by the way. New York, Kevin, you're on the Savage Nation, WOR, in the snowstorm. What's on your mind? Go ahead.
Hey, Mike. All right, here's the deal on scallops, okay? Scallops are a delicacy, okay? And most of the scallops that you're going to get go from the East Coast to the West Coast. And what I'm saying to you is perhaps this is, I don't know the caliber of the Chinese restaurant that you're going to, if it's a local place, they're not flying in good East Coast scallops.
Oh, no, they're not flying in. These scallops probably walked in.
But the fact of the matter
by
is...
By the way, but my friend today told me that he knows that many scallops are faked on top of it all, and they're skate wings, not even scallops. They cut them in an O-shaped out of the skate wing and sell them as scallops on top of it all, Kevin.
Absolutely, positively, and I'll tell you why real quick. I'm a student of seafood out here in Suffolk County on Long Island, and yeah. I hit every seafood place that I say they have fresh this, fresh that, and lately the Peconic Bay scallops has been on every menu, on every good restaurant out here in Suffolk County, and I would say to you that you're not getting the Peconic Bay scallops out there. No way in hell. And I got to tell you, I know the difference in a really good scallop. You can just look at it.
Oh, wait. I agree with you. I did this because it was local and I wanted a fast lunch, and I know basically it's not the highest quality. And I'm not here I know good scallops. You can tell them, you can smell them. They're sweet, by the way. They're soft and they're sweet. Am I correct?
Correct, absolutely. And the other point I want to make real quick is that, no, you don't look like an idiot smelling seafood because you're supposed to smell seafood before you buy it. And that's how you determine if it's...
Wait a minute. You got all these wine connoisseurs who sniff wine, they swirl it, and they smell it. But they won't smell a fish. Why is that?
Well, because they're idiots. I don't know what to say about that.
I mean, if you're going to smell the wine to see what the bouquet is before you drink it, why not sniff the fish before you eat it?
You're 100% right. You're right, and it's just...
Well, it's the same with virtually all food, truthfully. You can do the same with meat before you eat it. There's no reason not to. Why should you think that meat that you even buy in a supermarket is fresh? Unless you... The butcher used to lift it up, remember? And when you were a younger guy, he'd lift it up over... You come smell it over the counter. Remember that?
I do. So, anyway, so you're good with the... Put it this way.
No, I'm better now. I'm off the scrum. The scrum void is over. I'm not going to go there. It's the third time. The only thing I will not do is report the bum to the county. Okay, I should, though.
Right, Mike, and we love you out here on the Long Island, and we really do. You have many listeners. I just wish I could get some kind of Savage sticker to put on my back of my car.
I'll send you a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. You could put it on the roof of your car with neon signs. Oh, God. Black sauce. What blacks? Oh, black shades. I'm sorry. So I'll tell you another story. I'm going from the hard news into, personal, okay? I'll tell you another story. Just one to the other. It's snowing in the east. It's cold. You're in slush. You don't want to listen to politics. We know Obama's a revolutionary, socialist, communist, no-good Nick from top to bottom. And we know the liberal Democrats are communist, no-good tax mumsers from top to bottom. And we know that the Republicans are probably going to fake us out and put a bum in who can't win in order to have another 6 years. Anyway, so we know already we covered that. Now we can move on to chapter two of the Savage Nation, which is talk. I'm going to talk about how fate, here today, gone tomorrow, how you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, no matter how protected you think you are. And I'm not talking about security now. I'm talking about plain and simple chance or fate. In my town, I live in a number of places. In the town I live in, there's a wonderful little old-fashioned garage. No gasoline, no oil. He fixes things. And he fixes every car you can imagine, mainly the older cars. You can bring it in, whatever's wrong, a transmission, a carburetor, everything he fixes. Dave is a wonderful guy. And I've known him for 16 years casually. He's built like Paul Bunyan, like 6 foot, he looks like 6'10". A giant of a man and as gentle as a man could ever be. A nicest guy in the world. And I've always enjoyed bringing in the old Cadillac. In fact, I used to look around. I used to look for an excuse to bring the car in once or twice a year just to have him do something because I enjoyed hanging around the garage and talking to the mechanics. several of whom, by the way, are Mexicans trained in Mexico because they actually teach the young men how to do something in Mexico. Here they teach them how to be web designers, pornographers, and welfare recipients. That's what they teach them in college. Or actors in sex dramas. So anyway, I go there. I like to see men actually doing things, okay, fixing, blah, 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 blah. So the Cadillac wouldn't start the other day, the 65 Caddy. I have it at low mileage. It's a great car. I don't drive it once or twice a year. And I don't start, blah, blah, blah. So I figure the battery's there. We get the battery charge, bring it in, and still don't start. So he sends someone over. He says, okay, the gear selector switch is a little off. It wasn't, you know, they go off in an older car. Remember, it's a 65. So he takes the car in. He got it started and took it in. I go over there. I haven't seen him in a year. And I see he's limping. So I said, Dave, what's the matter? I figured he had arthritis, you know. We're both getting a little older. I figured he'd tell me a story or something. And we'd commiserate. He said, well, didn't you hear what happened to me? I said, no. He said, I got out of my car about a year ago. Right out of my driveway, I step out of my door and a woman slammed into me with her car, hit me from behind. I careened over her hood into her windshield. She broke both of my legs and broke, it was in the hospital, $600,000 in bill. I said, oh my God. I couldn't believe the story. I said, look, Dave, if it was a guy my size, he said, she would have run right over you. The rear wheels would have run right over you. Now, what's the moral of the story? I don't know the moral of the story. He is a good man. He's a kind man. He does good for people. Doesn't gouge people. He's an honest guy. And look what happens to him, right? Now compare him with some of the wonderful people on Wall Street who took away your 401k, and they're at Davos right now in their G550. Go add it up. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Send Fredo off to do that.
What are we about? What do we believe in?
Let Fredo take care of some Mickey Mouse nightclub somewhere.
That's what we have to answer here. And this bill is everything we don't believe in.
I can handle things. I'm smart. Not like everybody says. Like dumb. I'm smart. And I want the steps.
I see this as a question of whether we stand up for what this country was founded upon.
I can handle things. I'm smart.
And now he's suing the House of Representatives cafeteria for selling him a sandwich wrap containing an olive pit. If anything typifies the hypocritical liberal Democrat, the louder they are, well, you fill it in. That's Dennis Kucinich's voice, of course, who is now the laughingstock of the United States Congress for suing the House of Representatives cafeteria because they sold him a sandwich wrap containing an olive pit. That's while his leader, Obama, has said he wants to reduce frivolous lawsuits from the gonoffs with law degrees. That's old German for thieves. Tort lawyers, that's some system we have. All right, what do you want to talk about? Michigan, Mike, go ahead, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, first-time caller.
Thank you.
Well, this is a great topic about the fish and everything. I think we ought to do the same thing with presidential candidates. Line them up and let them.
Oh, okay, I'll tell you what. You go on the line first if you want to smell them.
Why not?
I think we can pretty much smell them from a mile away, don't you?
We got a clownfish that's been out there for 2 years, been stinking up the whole country.
Well, okay, there you go. Scallops for everyone. Housing agency spend thousands on belly dancers and luxury bags. This just came out. It's on michaelsavage.com. Take a look. Go take a look at your government at work. The federal government's low-income housing programs, which cost taxpayers $26 billion a year, are plagued by theft, mismanagement, and corruption. Take a look at the face of the federal government's low-income housing program. Take a look at who's running it. And he spent thousands on belly dancers and luxury bags. Go ahead. Go pay more money so you can help the poor. It's all on my website. Congressman tells Arab Network many Americans don't want to be governed by a black man. That's your good friend Jim Moran from Alexandria, Virginia, who never said a kind word about a Jew or Israel and never said a bad word about cutting off a person's hand in Saudi Arabia for robbing an olive pit. There he is speaking to an Arabic language broadcaster, putting down the American people, again trying to use the race card to try to push the liberal Democrat lies, thieves, and videotape. Bills denying birthright citizenship to be introduced in Arizona. These are on michaelsavage.com. Muslim population to rise by 1 billion in the year 2030. Isn't that good news? According to the Pew Research Center's Forum on Religion and Public Life, the Muslim population will increase globally by 35% in the next 20 years. Okay, I could add a few footnotes to that. Mainly, the only people who can save us from the Islamists are the Muslim women of the world. The only hope to stop the fanatics with beards who are getting their hate messages from the imams is to have the women liberate themselves from these monsters. Only Muslim women can save the world from the scourge. Egypt in crisis. I'll read that story. Taliban stoning of couple captured on videotape. You hear this? You want to hear how these wonderful people treat each other? A few dozen spectators, people from the local community, start throwing rocks at the woman who had already been placed in a 4-foot deep hole. And I don't want to tell you anymore. If you have a mind for this kind of thing, it's up on my website. But I want to pause right here because you say, well, they're barbaric, which they are. They're throwbacks, which they are. And this has to be stopped, which they have to. Okay. But I want to remind you that during the age of the British Tudors, which was not so long ago historically, what was that, 500 years ago? I don't really know if it's 500 years ago or thereabouts. During the reign of the Tudors, I will tell you what one of the punishments was to show you how barbarism is not limited to a specific people or race. It's a matter of time rather than it is people or race. So we see the Islamists still doing this in Saudi Arabia and parts of Afghanistan and Pakistan, right? But it just means that they're living in another century. They're living in the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th century or so. You pick it. In England, in the age of the Tudors, when they found one of the top church officials, whose name I forget for a minute, guilty of insubordination to the king, he had the nerve, I think it was not Cromwell, I forget his name, I'm sorry, my mind is not as sharp as I'd like it to be after the food poisoning. Let us just say a top church official, Thomas More, I believe, yeah, right? He was a great Catholic, yes. He refused to say that the king was greater than God. He insisted on saying he had more loyalty to God than to the king. So the king was so offended that he took this top Catholic church official and he sent them before this tribunal of English judges who found them guilty of whatever the crime was. And they said, your punishment shall be, you shall be led on an ox cart through the people tied to the cart. You shall be hung until you are half dead. Then you shall be disemboweled while you're still alive. Your bowels shall be set on fire in front of you. And then your private parts shall be cut off while you're still living and thrown into the fire. Then you shall be beheaded. This is what England did to the heretics who would not acknowledge the supremacy of the king over God. And it was only, 500 years ago or so, as I said to you. So barbarism is not limited to the Muslims. Barbarism was prevalent in the world. Thank God it was eliminated. And thank God it has been eliminated in most of the civilized Western world. But it has not been eliminated in good portions of the Muslim world. And this is the conflict that we have. It's not so much a conflict of civilizations as it is a conflict in centuries. And how you bridge this gap is a huge problem. As I said to you, the women are our only hope. Only when Muslim women stand up to these little fanatical men who oppress them, citing some holy lunatic somewhere as the right to beat their wives up or kill them if they date someone who's not a Muslim, only Islamic women can save the world from the scourge. But again, I hope I've given you some context with this historic analysis of how the British, or the English rather, treated their citizens under the Tudors, an extremely advanced administration in many, many other ways, just to show you what happens when you stand up to authority. If you think things are bad now, you have no idea how bad they once were and how bad they will be again. We have very, very thin-skinned leaders.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome Now, let's talk about the economy. Why did we have a government meltdown? Why did the economy collapse? We're told it was a global collapse and this and that. Okay, guess who was right? Me, Michael Savage. Trickle-up poverty. I told you it was orchestrated. Is there any proof to that? A new panel came out that cites the roots of the meltdown, shows clearly that Washington did it. Big study, it shows Washington did it. That's right, Washington did it. 633-page report. The Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission blames various culprits. Who are they? Banks that made reckless bets. Credit rating agencies that endorsed risky mortgage bonds. Government regulators who overlooked danger signs until they threatened the global financial system. Oh, really? What does that mean? Did they get paid off? This country is as corrupt as ancient Sicily, and that's why it's collapsing. That's my estimation. There are many other stories that we're going to talk about in this hour on the Savage Nation. Judicial Watch has uncovered documents detailing Madam Pelosi's continued abuse of Air Force jets for her personal use. Oh, really? She used aircraft from the Air Force with Air Force personnel for a total of 43 trips covering 90,000 miles just in the year 2010 from January 1 through October 1st. Did you hear this? Did you hear what I just said to you? 90,000 miles by Nancy Pelosi on Air Force jets. It's nauseating. It's nauseating. It's sickening that the House Ethics Committee does not investigate Nancy Pelosi, charge her with ethics violations, and make her reimburse the taxpayers the alleged $1.8 million that she cost the government. But what about the abuse of the Air Force? What about treating our Air Force personnel like her private lackeys? Doesn't that bother you? Also on the Savage Nation, terror on the border. We told you the Department of Homeland Security is useless. A book was found in the Arizona desert, just north of the U.S.-Mexican border, that celebrates suicide bombers. It was written in Arabic. And why do you think Big Sis just shut down the virtual border fence? Gee, any other questions? How about another story that came out on CNN? The decline of the FBI. I don't know about you, but I only wish that we had the original FBI man, the one that was smeared by the left for doing his job. They called him Gay Edgar Hoover as a joke because he was allegedly a cross-dresser and gay. You know what? I'll take a gay, cross-dressing FBI director over the one we have now. I felt it was a much better country. I didn't care anything about his sexuality. Wait until you hear what CNN has to say about what they caught FBI employees doing with almost no punishment. All of this and more on the Savage Nation. The details can be seen on michaelsavage.com. Iranian book celebrating suicide bombers found in Arizona desert. The big story, of course, is the Nancy Pelosi, as far as I'm concerned, and her abuse of the U.S. Air Force. That's also on my website. The article you shouldn't miss before it disappears is Niall Gardner's review of Barack Obama's State of the Union 2011, where he says, Obama gets another F for world leadership. The article is so well written. Let me just read you the last paragraph. In every respect, Obama's leadership is the antithesis of Ronald Reagan's. Reagan's leadership was driven by a fundamental belief in American greatness on the world stage and a clear vision of a superpower standing up to tyranny and threats to U.S. security. Instead of projecting U.S. power and values abroad, President Obama has been content to engage and appease America's enemies while paying scant attention to traditional allies. The State of the Union address was simply the latest in a string of weak-kneed statements on foreign policy, statements that increasingly resemble the words of a European Union bureaucrat rather than the leader of the most powerful nation on earth. Amen. Right on. Niall Gardner, his article's on michaelsavage.com. Don't miss it. Print it up and keep it. Also, you must see the quarterly emails that were released through the Freedom of Information Act on the abuses inside the FBI that were released by the CNN News Bureau. By the way, I take my hat off to CNN in this case. They did a much better job than Fox News. Wait until you see what these people have been doing, the ones who were caught. And these are the ones who were caught. And if you take a look at their punishments, you won't believe it. Here's one. Here's an FBI agent. One, abuse of position, lack of candor under oath. An FBI employee misused administrative leave, misused his credentials to gain entry into a nightclub, misused a government vehicle, provided law enforcement sensitive information to his girlfriend, who was a news reporter, improperly stored secret documents in a hotel room, which were viewed by his girlfriend, and following their breakup, threatened his girlfriend with the release of a sex tape the two had made, which threats she referred to the U.S. Attorney's Office. The employee also lied under oath during the course of the administrative inquiry. Penalty. Employee resigned after being proposed for dismissal. This is an FBI agent. Why should he be able to resign? Why is he not in prison? And this is only one of many. It gets worse. This is the Savage Nation. All this and more on MichaelSavage.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So now the watchword now is civility. Be civil. Let's all get along. Let's all get along. Let's all be civil. Don't you dare say a word against us. Now that we've taken away your rights, be civil. All right? Now that the Democrats have stolen as many rights from us as they can over 2 years, now all of a sudden they're screaming, oh, be civil. After screaming every insulting thing in the world to the town hall meeting attendees, and the Tea Party members calling them Nazis, calling them every nasty name in the world. Now suddenly they're calling for civility, using the murders in Tucson suddenly as a guide for how we should behave. Well, we're not insane. We know what's going on. We know that this call for the end of earmarks and the end of cut down spending means nothing. The spending cuts mean nothing. Unless you cut departments by 4% a year for 4 years, you're never going to solve this problem. Unless you rein in Medicare, Medicaid, unless you rein in Social Security, it's all over. Unless you stop giving illegal alien services that they're not entitled to. Unless you start taxing illegal aliens in cash if you need to. Why don't you fire the TSA agents who are frisking grandmothers and make them go shake down illegal aliens and take money out of their pockets as they go back over the border? How many billions of dollars a year go back to Mexico that should be going into our tax base? $15, $20 billion a year? Go to Western Union, you'll find out how much goes back. Western Union probably sends $15 billion a year to Mexico alone. That's money that should have been taxed. If they're suffering so badly here, if it's such a racist country, how come they have excess money to send home to the home country? How's that possible? And that's just Mexico alone? You imagine what's really going back to all of the home countries that they're fleecing out of the system because they got free everything. Free medicine, free legal, free this, free that. Free schooling for the children. So you want to straighten the country out? You're never going to straighten it out with this weak system that we have. Never in a million years. The system is rotten. The system has been destroyed by liberalism over the last 70 years. And unless you alter the system itself, you're never going to change it. And unfortunately, here's the kicker. It is being altered for the worse. Obama is a revolutionary socialist, and he is altering the system so that it can never come back. Never. If this man is allowed to go forward with his agenda, we'll never save the country. There's no comparison I could give. My mind isn't as sharp as it normally is. I have a V18 mind, but right now it's functioning on 12 cylinders. I don't know what it is. I'm just feeling the whole season hit me. I'm so fed up with the liars in Congress. I'm fed up with the president's fraud. I'm fed up with his play acting. I'm fed up with Rahm Emanuel making believe he's from Chicago when we know he hasn't even been there right in front of our eyes. He's been in the White House. Now all of a sudden he's from Chicago. He meant to be there. He was almost there. He left his underwear there. If you look in his closet, there's a pair of jockey shorts that were there over 12 years. Look at the DNA. It proves that I was in Chicago. If you look at the underwear, there's a pair of dirty socks underneath the rug. If you go in there with the limelight and put the limelight on the forensic science, you'll see that the underwear has been there for over 12 months. Therefore, I'm a citizen. What kind of country is this when they can nakedly steal offices from you and run for office and not even there? Not even there. Didn't even live there. Civility. What does civility mean? It means shut your mouth and let us keep fleecing you. That's what it means. And as sure as I'm sitting here, you know how the housing bubble was created by certain people. Now, you can blame if you want. Everyone made as much money as they could. The smallest person who bought a $50,000 condo and sold it for $62,500, 2 years later thought that he was Donald Trump. Donald Trump, I was in Florida a few weeks ago. He's been on the show a few times. We've come to enjoy each other's minds. So he says, he was giving a little talk to the table I was at, holding court, as it were, because he is the king of his own palace, and everybody respects him. So He's talking about, you can't find a product, he said, made in America. So I raised my hand. I said, you know, Mr. Trump, I disagree with you. He said, what do you mean? He said, I said, you said 2 minutes ago to this table that I'm sitting at that you can't buy anything made in America anymore. And I said, I disagree with you. He said, what do you mean? I said, you can buy as many congressmen as you can afford, and they're all made in America. Well, he got a kick out of that one. So I don't know whether it'll be a combo, why I chose it. What actually caused the indigestion? Is it the thought of Obama, things that you know are going to affect you negatively, right? So you say, well, I didn't know. You did know. You did know. You see, this is the problem with epidemiology. It's why it's not a really great science. It's very hard to prove what actually came first, the president or the Chinese food. It's very hard. It's like a chicken and the egg. It's whether the thought of the president's speech or the Chinese food. It's like when I was in the first grade, I had a teacher. Every time I go into the first grade, I get a migraine. Now, was it the confinement of the school, or was it the fact that the teacher wore the most disgusting perfume known to mankind? They called it toilet water in those days, because he went to poor schools, and the teachers were poor, God bless, and she wore toilet water. It stank. I got a sick migraine every time I walked in the classroom. And I didn't know, at the end of the day, was it her or the smell of the perfume, or was it school itself? It was very hard to figure out, but I had no control over the perfume she wore. We've been discussing Obama's incredible State of the Union speech. Joining us now from the Telegraph and the Heritage Foundation is Niall Gardner.
It's my pleasure to be here, Michael. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
You've written about Obama's terrible State of the Union speech and how he's nothing more than a European bureaucrat in action and in words. Well, I'd like you to give my audience some of your thoughts on his horrible speech.
The State of the Union address was dominated by President Obama's heavily flawed vision for reviving the American economy, with plans that remain overwhelmingly mired in an outdated big government mentality, and which spectacularly failed to include a coherent strategy for eliminating America's massive $14 trillion debt. But the State of the Union is also traditionally a major opportunity to project U.S. leadership on the world stage, and once again, Obama has fallen short. In 2010, I gave the president an F for foreign policy for his first State of the Union address. His 2011 address was certainly no better. For the second year running, President Obama has demonstrated that he is no world leader, and frankly has little interest at all in foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
The war in Afghanistan was barely a blip on the president's teleprompter. With over 100,000 American troops on the ground fighting the Taliban in defense of the United States and the free world, one would have expected the president to have dedicated more than a miserly 132 words to the war effort and the stakes involved.
Exactly.
There was no sense from the president of a plan for victory in Afghanistan or the wider importance of the conflict within the context of a global war against Islamist terrorism, which he resolutely refuses to even identify. Similarly, the Iranian nuclear crisis, arguably the biggest foreign policy challenge facing the Obama administration in 2011, was barely mentioned, meriting a single, rather pathetic line in the speech. Nor was there any declaration of support for dissidents in Iran, or a clear signal that the United States stands with those who are being brutally suppressed by the Islamist dictatorship. Again, in a major speech, Barack Obama has shied away from taking a clear stand on human rights issues, in marked contrast to predecessors, including George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan. The plight of hundreds of millions living under tyranny, from Burma to Zimbabwe to North Korea, was ignored altogether. No U.S. administration in living memory has paid less attention to the spread of liberty and freedom across the world than the Obama presidency, and this was glaringly apparent in Obama's State of the Union address. Nor was there any sense in his speech of America as a great, unique superpower that has made huge sacrifices in the defense of liberty across the world, from the beaches of Normandy to the battlefields of Afghanistan. For Barack Obama, American exceptionalism has been a meaningless concept rather than a central part of U.S. strategic thinking. In every respect, Barack Obama's leadership is the antithesis of Ronald Reagan's.
True.
Reagan's leadership was driven by a fundamental belief in American greatness on the world stage and a clear vision of a superpower standing up to tyranny and threats to U.S. security. Instead of projecting U.S. power and values abroad, President Obama has been content to engage and appease America's enemies while paying scant attention to traditional allies. tonight the latest in a string of weak-kneed statements on foreign policy, statements that increasingly resemble the words of a European Union bureaucrat rather than the leader of the most powerful nation.
How did the rest of the world look at Obama's terrible State of the Union speech?
Well, certainly in the UK, the press has given the speech a rather cool reception. For example, the Daily Telegraph, the most influential newspaper in London, gave it a very negative response overall. And I think that, you know, Barack Obama is certainly seen as a declining figure, not only in the UK, but also across most of Europe as well. And if you look at public opinion polls with regard to Obama, I think, you know, you see declining support for President Obama, definitely in Britain, but across the whole of Europe as well. I think he's increasingly seen as a very weak leader, and I think the State of the Union did not actually translate very well across the Atlantic.
Thanks for the report, Niall.
It's a great pleasure, and thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk about President Obama's State of the Union address, which certainly failed to inspire not only here in the United States, but also across the Atlantic in Great Britain as well.
We're losing our standing as a superpower. We're losing our military, our economy, and our culture. But at least we're all very civil about it. And now Democrats can openly sit with Republicans. I guess they've come out of the closet as Republicrats.
Savage.
Joining us now with an exclusive Savage Nation report is Eric Stackelbeck.
Well, Michael, always a pleasure to be here. And this week, I wanted to touch on these interesting movements we're seeing right now in the Arab and Muslim world, particularly in Tunisia, which kind of kicked things off last week. Now, as you probably know by this point, the Tunisian dictator, a guy by the name of Ben Ali, has been overthrown. He's left the country. Right now, there's kind of a fledgling movement, I guess we would say, in Tunisia. We have no idea, though, where it's going. Now, basically, the way this all happened was pretty rapid. It almost reminds you of the way, you know, the wall fell in Berlin back in 89, Michael. Young people in Tunisia, predominantly young people, working through social networking, through Facebook, Twitter, much like they did in Iran back in June 2009, where a million Iranians took to the street to protest Ahmadinejad. In Tunisia, you had a lot of young people taking to the streets, using social networking to rally. Now, they took to the streets, and in the matter of about a week or two, Ben Ali, the Tunisian president, was out the door. It was pretty dramatic the way it all happened, especially for an Arab-Muslim country. This doesn't happen in the Muslim world. You rarely, Pakistan, it's happened many times, but rarely in the Arab Middle East and in the Arab North Africa do you see a despot like this just taken out after a week or two of mass protest.
Do you see this as a good thing?
In one sense, Michael, I think it's encouraging. You know, people power, people rising up, they're saying they want democracy. That's great, but words of caution here, and not only for Tunisia, but the entire Middle East. Number one, we don't know what's going to replace Ben Ali. Bad guy, absolutely, who did cooperate with the U.S. in the war against Islamism. He was staunchly anti-jihadist, anti-radical Islam, which, hey, he's a bad guy, don't get me wrong. But in that sense, when we're in an existential struggle here in America and in the West against those very forces, at least Ben Ali had our back on that count, as bad as he was. But we don't know what's going to come to power there post-Ben Ali. And the big worry, Michael, my big worry is the Islamists, those very Islamists that Ben Ali, who was not a pleasant guy, that he opposed, may gain power in Tunisia. Now, I'm not talking about seizing the government yet, but every time Islamists see an opening, they move in.
Mm-hmm.
And already in Tunisia, which has not had a big radical Islamic movement by any stretch, compare Tunisia to other surrounding Arab-Muslim countries, Michael, there just hasn't been that jihadist Islamist movement there to any great extent because Ben Ali, the former president, really, really kept a tight leash on them, kicked a lot of them out of the country, threw a lot of them in jail, really used draconian measures, but hey, he tamped down that jihadist streak in Tunisia. It really hasn't been visible at all out of Tunisia. Now, with him gone, who knows? We already have news that an exiled leader of Tunisia's Islamist radical movement, a guy by the name of Rashid Ghannouchi.
Really?
Now, he'd been living overseas, Michael, for the past 10 years or so, was kicked out of the country. Now he's coming back to Tunisia. It's not just me voicing these concerns. Believe it or not, Michael, even ultra-liberal Time magazine had a piece last week saying or questioning whether radical Islamism will gain a foothold now in this new, I guess you would say it's kind of a fledgling Tunisian democracy. I don't know if we can call it democracy, but just it's a state of flux right now in Tunisia. Anyone can kind of move in right now and fill that void, and this guy Ghannouchi is a very bad guy. People have compared him, Michael, to a Tunisian Ayatollah Khomeini who's going to ride back into Tunisia and enforce Islamic Sharia law in that country. So it's a concern. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's a big concern in the Arab and Muslim world. When you have an opening like this, Islamist eyes light up, and they take advantage, and they move in. We've seen this many times. It's a worry in Tunisia right now, and rest assured, Michael, you'll have the Saudis and the Iranians trying to press their influence now in Tunisia at this time of great uncertainty there.
Oh, like we didn't see that coming.
It's anyone's game. It's a country that's up for grabs right now. And you have a guy like Rashid Ghannouchi, who is a jihadist, coming back into the country. Will he be greeted with a lot of acclaim? Will he be greeted with a lot of followers? And you have the Saudis, billions and billions in petrodollars, who have spread their tentacles across the world, not only in the Muslim world, but in Europe and the U.S. Will the Saudis now gain a foothold in Tunisia, start building mosques, where they're teaching that Saudi Wahhabi Islam? Will we see that? Will we see the Muslim Brotherhood, the world's largest Islamist movement, will they gain a foothold now in Tunisia? And even Iran. Tunisia is a predominantly Sunni Muslim country. Iran is Shia. But it doesn't matter to the Iranians, Michael. They have their tentacles everywhere in the Shia Muslim countries and Sunni Muslim countries. It's almost like a dueling war for influence in the Muslim world between the Saudis and the Iranians, almost like a Muslim Cold War in that sense.
Right, right, right.
Will they sink their teeth into Tunisia? So tiny Tunisia, which you don't hear much about, this is really an important story. And I think the larger implications of it have been overlooked in the Western mainstream media, not surprisingly. And this is already spreading the after effects, Michael, I guess you could say, of this Tunisian revolution, which is it's a real seminal moment in the Arab Middle East and Arab North Africa. It just doesn't happen there. Such revolts are violently put down. It's already spread next door to Egypt. Now, Egypt this week has had some really big anti-government protest against Mubarak, the likes of which we haven't seen in some time. I had a source tell me yesterday, Michael, who spent a lot of time in Egypt, when he was there, and whenever there was even an inkling of some anti-government protest, the protesters might make it about a block before they had their skulls cracked by state police. This time, in these most recent protests in Egypt, they've advanced several city blocks, very large crowds, thousands of people, very boisterous, throwing things, and very proactive against the Mubarak regime. Now, this is troubling to me in a lot. Hey, Mubarak's a bad guy. It's a good thing if a dictatorship's out of there. When I say it's troubling, my worry is the Muslim Brotherhood, Michael.
Why?
The Muslim Brotherhood is, Egypt is their seat of power. It's where the Brotherhood was founded. For those who don't know, the Muslim Brotherhood is the granddaddy of them all when it comes to Islamic terrorist groups. The inspiration for Al-Qaeda and Hamas is the Gazan branch of the Brotherhood. So this is who you're dealing with, a jihadist group. My worry is that, say Mubarak is overthrown, bad guy, without a doubt. Say he's overthrown. Just like in Tunisia, who fills that void? Is it the Muslim Brotherhood? And they're very strong in Egypt. Outside of Mubarak, they are the strongest force in Egypt politically. So if you have an Islamic State, Egypt, as Egypt goes, so goes the Muslim and Arab world. Bottom line, Egypt is the cultural center of the Arab world. If Egypt goes Islamist, and Al-Qaeda, Mubarak has cracked down on them a lot in Egypt, but they do have a presence there, especially in the Sinai region. If Egypt goes Islamist, it's big trouble. If Tunisia, tiny Tunisia, who knows? Looks unlikely, pretty secular country over the past 30 years. Now, with this void, who knows? Islamist movements are strong. You get charismatic leaders. You have young, unemployed people. And you have a recipe for some disaster, possibly. So in Egypt, post-Mubarak, he's the guy's 81 years old, Michael. He's sick. He's not well. He's rumored to have cancer. Who moves into Egypt in a leadership position post-Mubarak? I know a lot of people in the U.S. and the U.S. government are concerned about it. The Obama administration has no idea how to handle either Tunisia or Egypt. On one hand, they're saying, we support democracy, we support people's fight for freedom. Amen, absolutely. But on the other hand, there's been no talk of, okay, once these dictators are out of there, and they're bad guys, once they're out of there, who takes their place?
Exactly.
The worry is, what comes after? What comes after a guy like Mubarak? Is it a Muslim Brotherhood who would make Mubarak, bad as he is, look like a pussycat? That's a big worry. That's the problem we had all throughout in 2006, 2007, 2005 with the Bush administration pushing the democracy movement. Amen. I want democracy in the Middle East as well. But when you push that and you have a situation like in Gaza where Hamas comes to power, you have a situation like in Lebanon where Hezbollah gains power, in Egypt where the Brotherhood gains power, all through elections, which is what the Bush administration pushed, elections, elections, the vote. People are voting for Islamists. That's a big problem. And right now we see the fruits in Lebanon. Lebanon right now, the government there collapsed 2 weeks ago. Hezbollah is prepared to literally take over the Lebanese government.
Wait. Hold on a minute. Explain what you mean by that.
Already the new prime minister is a guy who's basically a Syrian puppet. His name is Najib Mikati. He's a billionaire, strongly connected to the Syrians, to Hezbollah. This is the new prime minister of Lebanon. A Syrian and Iranian and a Hezbollah stooge is now going to be running Lebanon. Hezbollah, behind the scenes, is the puppet master. Hezbollah is controlling that country. And if Hezbollah is controlling that country, Michael, that means Iran is controlling Lebanon. Iran considers Lebanon an arm of Iran. They consider that, I guess we would call it western, maybe northwestern Iran. They consider that an Iranian corridor. Hezbollah is a creation of Iran. And if Hezbollah is running that country, by extension, Iran is running that country. So Lebanon is an arm of Iran on Israel's doorstep. Yet in his State of the Union speech this week, President Obama didn't reference the situation in Lebanon once. What we have right now in Lebanon, this is developed this month, is an Iranian-Syrian satellite state on Israel's doorstep.
Oh, my God.
This is an existential threat to Israel. It already was with Hezbollah. But now you have Iran officially, governmentally, through Hezbollah, entrenched on Israel's border. When Mahmoud Ahmadinejad paid a visit to Lebanon, to southern Lebanon, back in October, that was no coincidence. That was a show of force. We are here. We are on Israel's doorstep, and to Europe and the U.S., we are on the Mediterranean via Lebanon. So these movements in the Middle East, I want democracy in the Middle East. I want freedom in the Middle East. But as always, the big question is, when you overthrow these secular despots who are evil men who don't stand for anything we stand for, human rights, democracy, freedom, anything, bad, bad guys, but when they go, what replaces them in the Middle East? Do we have something even worse in the form of Islamic jihadists? That's the worry, and we're really going to have to watch and see how this plays out. And that Lebanon situation is a major, major powder keg. Hezbollah has never been stronger, and war is in the offing. In the not-too-distant future, I firmly believe, Michael.
Thanks for the report, Eric.
Michael, thanks. Always a pleasure to be here. And you can catch my show, Stackelbeck on Terror, on CBNNews.com. Thanks again.
This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment.
Savage.
Here's a good story for you who are germophobic. I'm a germaphobe. If anyone sneezes, I leave the room. I was in a house of worship 3 weeks ago. Everything was going well till a sneezer appeared 2 rows ahead of me. I left. That's all. God would have to understand, I figured. A sneeze, but it was not just a sneeze. I'm not talking about a dust sneeze. This was a mucosal sneeze that could have infected the entire house of worship. And the guy didn't do it once. He did it 5 times. That's it. Goodbye, Charlie. I was out of there. So I guess I'm a germophobic in that regard because I say to people, I don't shake their hand. I do the ghetto thing with the fist. It's a smart thing. It's very Chinese. I like it. People try to shake my hand. Now I do the ghetto thing like a basketball with the fist. They laugh. I say, well, I do it because I don't have to touch your hand. I said, they're smart. The Chinese shook their own hand. They were even smarter yet. You went to shake it. Remember the ancient like pictures? They'd shake their own hand. They were, well, I need to touch your hand. What's handshakes about? So, anywho, I don't, if I'm in a room, a sneeze, a cough, once is okay, but if it's very fluid, there's a lot of fluid, I leave. I don't like, because I know it's spraying. Even from high school days, they showed, how come in my day, if they showed a sneeze, they showed it in slow motion, and how far a sneeze spread the germs? Like a like 12, 15 feet, right? You knew to avoid. My mother said, don't use a public water fountain. And there were other kids, they'd stick their mouth fountain in Queens. They had like stone fountains and like water. And it was always like never a lot of enough water. It was always like within a quarter of an inch of the spout. There was always like a schmuck who'd put his mouth over the... He'd like suck on it. You'd think the guy was crazy. I wonder where those kids wound up. They have to have wound up working in government somewhere. I don't mean for Obama. Let's not get absurd. Like the MTA, something like that. So what I'm getting at is I've always been germophobic, and I read a story today that Norway has practically wiped out the superbug that was infecting the nation and has made Norway one of the most infection-free nations in the world. And take a guess what they did to wipe out the superbug in Norway. It's not that they took a drug. It's not that they ate certain foods. It's not that they exercised. It's not that they instituted Obamacare with another incompetent doctor telling you nothing and to go home and take an antibiotic. It's the opposite. Do you know what they did to eliminate the superbug? Do you know what they did to eliminate the contagious staph infection that had been killing tens of thousands of patients in the most sophisticated hospitals of Europe, North America, and Asia this year? Norwegians stopped taking antibiotics. In fact, it became a crime for a doctor to prescribe an antibiotic unless it was a medical necessity. Now, how many doctors in this country will have a patient come in with a sort of non-specific symptoms of a cough, and they'll give you an antibiotic? And the patient, you know, doesn't know any better, and they take it. And I tell people, is it a viral infection or a bacterial infection? Yeah, duh, I don't know. I said, well, you may be making it worse with an antibiotic. And they look at me like I don't know what I'm talking about. But now Norwegian doctors know what they're talking about. And they prescribe fewer antibiotics than any other country. So people do not have a chance to develop resistance to these antibiotics. And that comes down to the whole story. A doctor says there, if I treated someone with an infection in Spain with this penicillin, I would probably be thrown in jail. And rightly so, because it's useless there. It's a type of penicillin they use on a very specific type of infection. And they say Norwegians now are sanguine about their coughs and colds, toughing it out through low-grade infections. We don't throw antibiotics at every person with a fever. We tell them to hang on, wait and see, and we give them a Tylenol to feel better. Now, I don't use Tylenol. I don't use drugs like that because they're toxic. They're liver-damaging, in my opinion. They're... absolutely to be avoided, most of these drugs, incidentally, particularly if you have a hangover. Don't you dare use any of those over-the-counter medications. If you have to use anything, use an aspirin. Don't go near those other acetaminophens. You're just going to wind up with a liver transplant eventually. They're toxic to the liver. They're toxic to the kidneys. I've been saying this for 15 years. I've been writing about it for 15 years. I didn't do the original research, but I knew enough to study the original research and to publicize it. And so in Oslo, Norway, they have soothing but non-medicated lozenges, sprays, and tablets. All workers are paid on days they or their children stay home sick. And drug makers aren't allowed to advertise, reducing patient demands for prescription drugs. Now, compare that to America. where every other ad is for a medication, primarily for painkillers. Every other medication is a painkiller in America. Every normal quirk and slight this, they want you to drug it to death, and you wonder why there's such a line for a liver transplants in this country. Anyway, the bottom line is that the use of antibiotics became out of control in Norway, and the staph infections became rampant because of the use of the antibiotics. The staphylococcus became penicillin resistant. And now, because they've cut back on antibiotics for generic use, the people are getting better. And the question is, can Norway's program really work elsewhere? I don't want to do a medical show right now, but the solution to kill a superbug found in Norway, the solution is cut back on antibiotics. And your take-home message is, the next time Dr. Quack gives you an antibiotic for a cold or a cough, say to Dr. Quack, is it a viral infection or a bacterial infection? If Dr. Quack gets mad at you and says, I don't know, then don't ever go back to Dr. Quack.
Savage.